This is The Exchange on KUCB. I'm Stephanie Joyce. Today, in the aftermath of the New Year's Eve grounding of Shell's Kulik drill rig, many people have been questioning the company's ability to operate safely in Alaskan waters, especially since the incident followed on the heels of other blunders by the oil giant, including the near grounding of the company's other drill rig in Unalaska in July. Alaska Senator Mark Begich has been a strong proponent of offshore drilling. Some even credit him with winning White House support for the program. And he joins me today via telephone from Washington, D.C. to discuss the Kulik grounding and its implications for the future of offshore drilling in Alaska. Thanks for joining me, Senator Begich.
Thank you very much. Hope things are going well there. Hope the weather is better than here.
It sounds like we're having better weather here today than you are there.
I think so. We're in kind of mid-30s and rain, and it's damp and cold, and Alaska's warming up.
Yeah, well, the roles are reversed every once in a while.
There we go.
Before we jump in to questions, Senator, I just want to remind listeners that they can call in with their questions or comments. We aren't able to take calls on the air today, but Jane is answering the phone, and we'll make sure that those messages get to me here in the studio. So if you have thoughts, comments, or questions for the Senator, feel free to give us a call at 581-2161, or you can send an email to news@kucb.org. So just jumping right in from there, I wanted to ask you, how has this incident changed your mind about offshore drilling, if at all?
It really hasn't. I guess what it's done is, put in front of us lots of good questions that need to be asked. I think the first thing is, as you mentioned in the intro, we've worked hard the last 4 years to move forward on Arctic oil and gas exploration. It's an important part of our long-term national energy strategy, our national security strategy. And honestly, for Alaska, it's about a ton of jobs and opportunity for Alaskans. And so we're going to continue to move forward. If you look at the actual drilling season, the work that was done in the Arctic, the actual drilling, they were very successful. They ran into weather issues, but they got down in the first layer of drilling. They know this year, that they anticipate if they get back up there, they'll be able to get into the reservoir. No incidents occurred up there. As a matter of fact, the plan they had laid out, for example, when there was ice moving in onto the rig, it was required by the plan that everyone agreed to stop the drilling and move the rig, which they did. So in a lot of ways, that worked pretty good. The challenge came in, as you know, more than anyone in your part of the state, and that is the issue of the rig and the weather conditions and what happened there. And, if you think about it, and again, you all know better than anyone in the whole country, really, how many ships are moving through the Bering Sea that aren't oil and gas related? Just last year, if you recall, we had a military vessel run aground, spill 15,000 gallons of diesel. This rig, it got a lot of, a lot of activity with the high winds, high waves, but no lives lost, no injuries, no spill of any kind occurred, and now they're examining the ability to construct or repair what's necessary there. What that told me was they got the worst live test that they could ever have asked for, but they came out of it in pretty good shape. But it begs a lot of questions. Let me make that very clear. Why did they leave in the conditions of the storm? Why did the tug lose all four engines? So we intend to have a review of this through the committee that I chair, which is the Ocean Subcommittee that deals with Coast Guard fisheries, NOAA, and have a strong question and answer from Shell Oil Company, as well as Coast Guard and others. But, oil and gas development is going to happen in the Arctic. We can argue about if it should or not, but it's happening. The question is, how do we manage it and manage it the best way? And this incident occurred not in the drilling. Matter of fact, if you watched one of the national TV shows, they actually showed it, by the Aleutian Chain, and they described that is the area they were drilling in. and which, of course, you know, was news to me, and I'm sure it was news to folks in the Aleutian chain that there was Shell drilling, and that just shows how much misinformation is out there. So, but we got hard questions we need to ask, and we need to make sure we do it the safest and best way possible, and that's what our target is.
Yeah, and I do want to come back to some of those questions that you're interested in asking in that oversight hearing. You know, but I also wanted to ask you, you know, this isn't obviously the first incident that Shell has been in. It's had quite the track record over the last 6 months, including here in Unalaska. You know, does the sheer volume of mishaps that the company has had raise any questions for you about their ability to operate safely, not just while they're drilling, but, you know, period?
Well, I think it begs the question. This is, now keep in mind, it's a pretty significant operation. It's the first kind like this in 30 years. And third, when you look at what they are required to do is far above any place in the outer continental shelf of this country, what they're required to do. So they have requirements that are new or extensive compared to the rest of the country. So, you know, the chances that they're going to have some issues are there. The question really is, this is the exploration and transportation stage, so it's the lowest risk potential. So we have to make sure that, you know, we're going to ask some hard questions. They are not going to get a free ride. They're not going to sit in front of that committee and just tell us things are great. They're going to have to show us that they can do this in an environmentally safe and sound way, as we have required of them from day one. But you know, I am still optimistic about oil and gas development in the Arctic. I think it can be done in the right way. This company has had some issues, which they have been very forthright with us, and I know the U.S. Coast Guard in describing the situations as they unfold or as they are happening in the sense of the actual incident, like in this case. So, you know, we're going to be on them because we want to make sure it's done the right way, and we have a unique environment to protect in Alaska, recognizing we have kind of a mixed bag in the sense of we have fisheries as well as oil and gas, and how we make sure these don't conflict with each other.
Yeah, so what are some of those questions that you're hoping Shell will answer in the hearing that you're going to hold?
Absolutely. And let me underline it by saying I'm not hoping they'll answer them. They will answer them. They must answer them for Alaskans. And that is, you know, why did they set out in those weather conditions? What was the reason the tug had four engines fail at the same time? And also for the Coast Guard, we're going to have some questions. And for the Coast Guard, there'll be questions like, you know, what was the ability and response time when this incident started to occur that Shell was in contact with the Coast Guard? How was the emergency center operation set up? How did it run? Were the incidences and the equipment available for this incident readily available? There's a slew of questions that I'm not only producing, but we're getting good comments from Alaskans and people who understand this industry from kind of a outside-looking in-group asking us to kind of pose several questions, so we intend to do that. But, you know, it's not a question of, okay, thank you for letting us know and you didn't answer the question, but good luck. It's going to be, you need to answer these questions to our satisfaction in order to continue to move forward. Oil and gas development will occur in the Arctic. We just want to make sure it's done the right way. And this is an opportunity to really ensure that's going to occur. And they had, you know, when you think about it, that ship, a lot of people thought it was going to break apart. And I'm sure folks on the Aleutian chain were most nervous about that. End result is this ship, for all its construction technology, endured a pretty strong storm, which tells me that that's something we should also learn from. What is that structure capacity, and do we need to consider that in future construction of any other vessels that work in the Arctic?
Yeah, and it's sort of along those lines, you know, what are you going to do with the answers you get to these questions, you know, in response to the structural you know, capabilities of the rig? Would you consider introducing legislation to require vessels operating the Arctic conform to those standards? Are there, mm-hmm. there specific goals you have with getting these questions answered?
Yeah, I do think there's that's a great example right there. For example, if we find that this is the kind of structure very similar to, years gone by when we went from a single hull to a double hull in all our shipping of oil products within Alaska. That was a design change that made our water safer, the environment safer, and ensured that if there was an incident of any kind, we were protected. So I think those are the kind of issues that if it requires legislation or the simple activity with the Interior Department and Coast Guard when they're making requirements for any Arctic development, that they might be able to do them just through regulatory process. But either way, we hope to learn some things, and it may require some additional legislation in the future for future development and or regulatory process.
And we have a question from a listener who would like to know if you have ever been to Unalaska and if you would consider holding that subcommittee hearing here in town. And I'll broaden that to Alaska in general so that people from communities affected by offshore drilling could participate.
Yeah, I haven't been specifically. I've had staff in Alaska, but been to Cold Bay and, you know, obviously Dutch, or not Dutch, but Kodiak and kind of pieces of the Aleutian chain, but not out there as much as I would like to be out there. To do the hearing out there may be complicated only because we may have a limited time, but our goal is first to do it in Alaska. That would be the right place to do it. It depends on what's happening here in Congress because we may be required to stay here for a variety of actions, and therefore, you know, I want to have the hearing in a reasonable time. If we can't get a hearing, then we'll do a review process, which, again, would love to do it in Alaska first, because I think Alaskans need to hear this firsthand, and the best place to do it, obviously, is in Alaska. We had a hearing last October, and we did it in Alaska. We had folks from the North Slope, we had Interior Department, we had the Coast Guard, we had NOAA, we had a variety of folks to report to us, as well as Shell, on what happened this year, because that, again, we thought was important. The room was packed, as you can imagine. Anytime you can hold something like that in Alaska, you're going to get a lot of Alaskans to attend.
And we have another question here from a listener who would like to know how, with a shrinking federal budget, you're going to be able to ensure that there are adequate resources to fill, I guess, what's being called the response gap.
Well, I think it has to be a priority. As you know, or may not be aware, that in this incident, Shell has offered to compensate the Coast Guard for some of the costs that were incurred, and that's a first step, and that's also a precedent and something we should consider in the long term, that, you know, doing work in the Arctic is going to require additional resources as it gets to development stage, and the industry needs to be part of that cost.
And we just got the news this morning that Interior Secretary Ken Salazar, whose department obviously oversees the agencies that regulate offshore drilling, will be retiring in March. How do you think that Secretary Salazar's resignation will affect offshore drilling moving forward?
Well, you know, he's been a strong supporter, but in a lot of ways, we've been very active with bringing him into what we consider a view that I think is much more in line with Alaska thinking regarding how to do development in Alaska. I talked to him this morning, the secretary. He called me to also give me the news, but also about a conversation and the work that we've done over the last 4 years in regards to oil and gas development. He's been, I think, a fair and rational approach to this. Not everyone agrees with his position. Sometimes we've had to, you know, pound back on him. But at the end of the day, he's, I think, as interested as we are in doing the right kind of development in the Arctic, but moving forward on development. So I'm hopeful that whoever comes in next has the same, thinking as we do and as he's been working through it. Now, again, he's not been always the biggest supporter of some of our ideas, but he's been open to listening to what we're trying to do and then crafting the right approach, and we're okay with that.
Yeah, and, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you've been credited in the past with playing a key role in getting White House approval for offshore drilling. Would you say that's an accurate assessment?
You never want to just pat yourself on the back, but I know the New York Times did an article about this, and I think, you know, a lot of people made that comment. And, you know, we were very aggressive the day we came in. We made it clear to the president even before he got elected. I met him at an event I was at in Florida and had a private meeting with him explaining some of the issues that I will bring to his attention if he gets elected. And of course, he then got elected, and I spent a lot of time laying out to him and his administration why and how we can do this the right way. And I think that has had significant impact. I'm not sure where they would have gone, to be frank with you. For 30-plus years, there's been no activity up there. And all I can say is in the last 4 years since I've been in the Senate, we've moved forward on Arctic oil and gas development. And I think it's a lot of advocacy from myself and members in my office, making sure the administration is well in tune with what we think is the right approach. And then at the same time, not afraid to call these oil and gas companies and making sure they understand that this isn't just some free ride. This is they got to work at. They got to create the safest environment that anything will be developed in the outer continental shelf in this country, and they got to be respect the communities that surround these developments and what their concerns are and input. So you know we've laid in pretty heavy, and I think the record kind of says it pretty clearly that. You know, in the last 4 years, it's moving forward. Prior to that, it was going nowhere.
You know, and given that, you know, given your immediate involvement, I guess, in making this happen, do you think that, you know, looking forward to 2014, your reelection depends on a successful offshore drilling program?
I don't think it depends on it. I think people will want to, make it good or bad, depending what side you're on. But I think it's one of many things we've worked on. You know, as you may recall, bypass mail was on its deathbed until we came in. I served on the committee on that issue. Homeland Security, Government Services helped craft the language to make sure that it was protected. Essential Air Service, another issue that was in trouble. We went out there, worked with Republicans, as I have do all the time, and try to figure out where the balance is, was able to save that program. Or, you know, up in Fairbanks, Eielson Air Force Base, again, was in deep trouble, and I did some maneuvers and some that consider them unorthodox, but got the attention of the Pentagon, focused on what was right, and now we have Eielson Air Force Base still moving forward. And so I you know, our approach is, you know, these issues all come from Alaskans, and we fight hard on them. I believe at the end of the day, people will look at the oil and gas development and see that we were instrumental in that in moving it forward, while the states kind of dithered on this issue. From our end, the federal government, we've been active, and we're the ones that are probably going to start filling that pipeline when they haven't. I mean, look at National Petroleum Reserve, CD5. That was, again, in significant trouble until we came along and worked with the Interior Department. So this year, ConocoPhillips will start the process of development. I'm not sure they'll be in production this year or next, but they're in process. That will add 15 to 20,000 barrels a day to the pipeline.
So, Senator, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want to take. We just have a few minutes left, and I want to take the time to ask another question from a listener. Councillor Dennis Robinson, a city councillor here, would like to ask, with the stringent regulations that are placed on Shell, do you see those same regulations spilling over into the fishing community and shipping community that operate in the North Pacific and Bering Sea?
I don't think necessarily the fishing community, because we have our own rules that fall under that, but I do think that one of the areas is these international ships that are coming through the Bering Sea. As you know, we have sometimes no knowledge of these foreign ships that are coming through and what they're constructed by. So I would hope that we would have stronger regulation. I've actually introduced legislation last session that talks about shipping lanes and shipping management of ships that are coming through the Bering Sea, because there's so many that are non-U.S. flagged or non-fishing related that we just don't know what they are. So I don't think so on the fishing. I do on foreign ships that are coming through the Bering Sea, that we have to have a better understanding of what these vessels are and what they're carrying.
And, you know, obviously we have had many oil spills and major maritime disasters happen out here in the Aleutians. And, you know, historically, the communities nearby end up being the ones most effective, and also, you know, end up being the ones who pay. And when it comes to offshore drilling, it seems like communities like Unalaska are right now taking the biggest risk, but there's no real guarantee of payoff since the drilling is actually happening in the Outer Continental Shelf in federal waters. And, you know, I understand that Senator Murkowski has drafted a bill that would guarantee revenue sharing with the state. And I just wanted to ask you if you've had any involvement in that process, and do you think there's likely to be any movement on the issue this year with everything else that's happening in Congress?
Yeah, I think there is. I introduced a bill last year. I had a little different language than Senator Murkowski, but we're pretty much on the same, and that is revenue sharing is critical for all the reasons you just said. Ours talks goes all the way down to distribution to tribes also, not just local governments, and we limit how much goes to the state governments. We try to put more of our resource into local governments. But Senator Murkowski and I agree that there needs to be a revenue sharing program. Several years ago, before I got here, there was a piece of legislation that moved forward, and the Gulf states down in the lower 48 got it, and somehow Alaska was not included, which I thought was outrageous. So I have been successful in the last two or three years of getting some bills to have this language. Now, saying that, you're right, it's going to be a tough road in Congress these days, but this seems it's a fairness issue. If we're going to have the development, we need to have these resources attached to local communities so they can respond in any way they want. It doesn't necessarily mean if there's an incident, but also the impact when you have, you know, a lot of people now living or in your case down in the Aleutian Chain, especially in Alaska, a lot of the port areas being consumed by oil and gas equipment and boats, and we need to make sure there's space in there for our fishing industry, which was the first industry there. So I'm optimistic, and you're going to see some hard work by myself and also obviously by Senator Murkowski on this issue.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you joining me, Senator. That's all the time we have.
All righty. Thank you very much. Have a great day.